You're listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast, but before we get started, I wanted to tell you about an exciting opportunity for you and the leaders you know this fall, the Pipeline Conference. Our team, the Lifeway Leadership Team, is hosting Pipeline on October 13 in Nashville. And it's a conference unlike others you've probably been to because it's a training conference, an event that will show you and your church leadership team how to launch a leadership pipeline. You'll hear from speakers such as Tom Rayner, Eric Geiger, Kerry Newhoff, and Paul Tripp. We'll have plenary sessions interspersed with shorter, practical TED-style talks. We'll have Q&As with the speakers to clarify and apply what was said, and we'll also offer a second day built around coaching and implementation that will have limited seating. And we really want you to join us. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more and to register. Pricing is affordable, and we're offering an early bird discount through the end of July, so you want to move quickly. Again, go to myleadershippipeline.com for more information and to register. We look forward to seeing you there. Enjoy the podcast.
Welcome to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. I'm your host, Barnabas Piper, here as usual with Todd Adkins.
What?
Todd is the director of leadership here at Lifeway, so he oversees all of our leadership development efforts for churches, for ministries, those kinds of things. I work with Todd. Today, our guest is somebody you heard briefly in the background on the podcast not too long ago, a gentleman named Nick Kane. Welcome to the podcast.
Nick Kane is a great name, by the way.
Thank you.
I think there's a Nick Kane who's an Olympic swimmer, maybe. Because if you Google Nick Kane, you're the first one who shows up, but you're not the only one who shows up.
There you go. There's quite a few Kanes. I am one of 10 boys so in our family. So,
nice.
So there's quite a few of us.
And,
but it is
and how many
to be here.
10 boys, how many girls?
5.
That's 15 kids.
That's a good ratio.
That's a lot
of kids.
Yeah, not a lot of television, but a lot of kids.
That's the way it should be.
That's right. Quick introduction on who Nick is, or at least what Nick does. We'll let him tell you who he is. He is the CEO of A21. That is a movement seeking to eliminate sex trafficking and injustice around the world. And in fact, when we confirmed this podcast, and I was texting back and forth trying to nail down details, I think I caught you on the border of Greece meeting Syrian refugees. Is that right?
That is true.
So that was, to me, sitting in my nice office in comfy Nashville, Tennessee, that was a bit of a wake-up call as to the reality of what A21 does. And it was really cool because it is feet-on-the-ground stuff. It's not just sort of a... It's not just
collecting
a
collecting and distributing
yeah,
money. And
exactly. They're not just
I love
funding.
People that get their hands dirty.
Yes.
So.
And then also, Nick is the CEO of Equip and Empower Ministries, which includes his wife, Christine's speaking ministry. It includes Propel. We talked with Christine on the podcast at length about the ministry of Propel, and then their European mission. So as he put it, he is the CEO of a women's empowerment ministry?
That is me.
So
I'm in touch with my feminine side.
I would hope so, or that would be a tough job.
It would be.
So welcome again, Nick, and we're excited to have you back. We're also excited to get through this podcast so we can go eat some hot chicken.
That's right, because...
So if we talk fast, we've got places to be.
No, that's true. The last time, Christine really, I don't know, she provided a lot of color commentary on my breakfast selection that morning. It was second breakfast, but nonetheless. So, and you know, I told Nick, hey, man, the next time you're in, let's go eat poorly.
Yeah. So we're going to go and explore the culinary excellence of the South and
That's
try and
true.
Find some
and
fried chicken.
Here's what I told him last night. It will change your life. It may also change your life expectancy. I make no promises there.
So does waking up every morning. You reduce your life expectancy by one day every day. So there's a thought to encourage you.
Let's close in prayer. All right, Nick, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Let me think about that. I am fortunate to be married to one of the most beautiful, most talented women and gifted women on the planet called Christine Kane. We have two great kids, Catherine and Sophia, and they are awesome, the love of our lives. And I get to work with about the most talented group of people that I know in our team sort of across the world. I am also a reform merchant banker. My degree is in banking and finance, and I used to run a fixed interest desk and for a merchant bank back down in Australia. and then came to Christ and realized that there was probably something else for me to do. And so then started working with churches and ministries across the globe out of our church in Sydney, Hillsong Church, and got to partner with churches across the spectrum. And then out of that, A21 and Propel and all the other things that we do were birthed. So I get to live a fantastic and exciting life and trying to make a difference as we go along.
Good deal.
Well, why don't we jump into our five questions? Same ones we ask every episode, and always fascinated by the different answers we get. And we have yet to run out of guests who come up with good answers. So
that's good.
No pressure.
I'll try and not be the first.
All right. Our first question is, who are you learning from right now?
To be perfectly honest, you guys are amongst my favorite people to learn from. In that, we were just talking before we started the podcast about the fact that I was just listening to a couple of your other podcasts this morning. So I love listening to you guys and all the people that you guys have on. Reading wise, Patrick Lencioni is one of my favorites at the moment.
Do you have a favorite book of his?
That's what I was going to say.
Five Dysfunctions of a Team.
Okay,
it's a classic. Everything that he does is great, but I think particularly in the church world, Five Dysfunctions of Team, and I would say definitely for anybody going through multi-site or going through a lot of growth, politics, silos, and
that was
turf
the other
wars.
One that I was about to say, silos. He's trying to get everybody unsiloed. It's just such a key.
Have you read his book, The Advantage?
I have.
Okay, that was my favorite of his, with Five Dysfunctions of a Team being second. That's sort of his sort of categorical overview, saying all of these other books that I've written on specific subjects, they feed into this, The Advantage, talking about organizational health. Phenomenal book.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm a big believer in that, because healthy things grow. So if we can keep everything healthy, then things will grow and you have a lot less problems.
Yep.
Are there any other books or, you know, podcasts, blogs, any other source of information you're like, yes?
Yeah, I love the Entree Leadership podcast. Mm-hmm. I love Tim Keller's podcast. Obviously, Brian Houston's podcast. But we're in a really unique position in that we are constantly traveling. And we're constantly with different leaders. And so I get to ask lots of questions of some of the great leaders in Christendom and in business. Mm-hmm. And that's probably my favorite way to learn. I'm a bit dyslexic, so I can sit on a treadmill with Christine, and she will knock out an entire book in the time that I've knocked out a chapter. So for me, reading is lots of hard work, but I'm really good at asking questions and then listening. I got brought up to say that you've got two ears and one mouth. So if you use them in that proportion, then you'll go further. So I constantly ask questions of people, and we get to visit with people like Craig Rochelle. Mm-hmm.
One of our favorite guests on this podcast.
Absolutely.
We were just in Germany with Bill Hybels on late last week. And so Brian Houston. So all of those got people who are phenomenal leaders. I get to right. quiz them and then listen to their answers. And I find that for me is a great way to listen. So I'm an avid podcast listener. I love Disney Magic with Lee Cottrell. And some of those other ones where you just get different perspectives. I like to get as many different perspectives and worldviews right. as I can.
Well, and you're probably not going to learn a ton of new stuff, especially, you know, as you grow in leadership and with age and experience, you get to a certain point where there's a saturation effect that happens. And you're not going to progress, or you're not going to learn if you're looking at the same sources as everybody else, especially everybody else in your swim lane.
Absolutely.
And you're not challenging yourself and stretching yourself. It doesn't mean that you abandon who you are, but certainly to be stretched, I think it requires that.
Yeah, you've got to be learning from people who have undertaken bigger challenges than you have. And ideally from a different perspective than what you're coming from, because if you're only asking questions and engaging with the same people, then you keep on getting a similar theme. So I always want to be trying to get something different, and try and learn something from somebody that is got a completely different background, right. Completely different emphasis, and then try and draw the gold out of that.
We did an episode with Brad Lominick not too long ago about being a learning leader. Excuse me. And we talked a lot in there about asking questions. Do you have sort of go-to questions that you ask just, to start a conversation with somebody? Or is it always just sort of per leader, per context?
I tend to ask, what are your biggest challenges at the moment? Mm-hmm. What are you going through? And then I'll ask, as you work through those questions, I'll ask, what are you doing that's working? What do you think has got sort of that oil on it? What do you think that is really taking things ahead for you? And what are the things that you're looking at doing next?
Right.
They're probably my go-to questions, because mm-hmm. you then get into what that person is really passionate about at the moment.
Right.
Well, that's a go-to question for us. In fact, it is number two.
That's right. You just asked the question.
You want to just ask yourself, what's the main point of emphasis in your leadership or for your team right now? Or it sounds like, it almost sounds like you have a team of teams.
Well, yeah. Yeah, we have multiple teams. So we have I think 13 offices in 10 countries at the moment, with sort of another probably 3 or 4 in the pipeline to launch this year. And so they all have different emphases. And so what we've had to do is, I've been talking about it to our team over the last year, that we've grown from small to we're just on the edge of medium at the moment. So we had to restructure the way we did everything. Mm-hmm. We put in executive directors over our various areas. So we've got an executive director who manages Propel for us. We've got an executive director over A21 and an executive director over our European mission. And that's meant that for a bunch of our team, their reporting looks different. For me, empowering those people to be effective is a change, because I'm used to having my fingers sort of deeply into every pie, and getting myself out of some of those things is a big emphasis at the moment. So it's a whole restructure for us.
Has that been a freeing thing or a difficult thing, because you have been invested in them and now you're kind of handing them off to trust others with them?
Both. Both. I come from a long line of control freaks, and and that comes naturally to me.
You're one of 15 kids. That sounds really difficult to
really
deal with.
It's really counterintuitive.
That's right. You think it would just be like, whatever, survive the day.
Yeah. Well, survive the day in family, but work-wise,
right.
And ministry-wise, we're all pretty much sort of make sure we've got our fingers on the pulse. And so to hand it off has been really hard at some points, because it means that there's information's coming more slowly and you don't know exactly, you're not in the day-to-day of everything. But it's been very empowering and very freeing, because there's now just too much going on to try and read in detail every detail of what's going on in, right. in every country, and all that whole minutiae of stuff, while at the same time being aware of all the key things that are happening, because of the nature of A21 especially, there's risk levels associated with it that I actually have to know a whole lot of the key things that are going on. So I'm constantly on the phone to key people, and constantly trying to maintain sort of the high level information.
You're not exactly dealing in a stable marketplace.
No.
Oh no, there's nothing stable. Like, there is nothing about our world which is consistent. And there's nothing. You just think about Greece, for mm-hmm. example. We've got economic collapse. We've got a country which has got a different emphasis on what's okay to a lot of other people. Like, one of the classic stories is, as we set the Greek office up, we ordered 100 megabit internet connection.
I can see where this is going.
And then we checked it, and it's running at about 5 megabits. And we pointed that out to the technician, and he shrugged his shoulders and looked at us and says, well, yeah, that's normal. If you want 100, then you've got to order the gigabit connection, as if that was a absolutely perfectly...
That's the exchange rate.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. So there's so many stories where it's just sheer chaos along the way. Sort of, we're dealing with the refugees on the border, and the situation there changes daily. And Greece is changing the whole structure of how they're dealing with that because of the political implications and the fact that the rest of Europe want to maintain border control, and strictly speaking, asylum is granted in the EU in the first safe country that you land at. So Greece
is an entry point.
Yeah. Greece is an entry point, and 85% of the refugees from the Middle East are hitting Greece first, which means that Greece is supposed to house them, and then passage is being granted to Syrian, Afghani, and Iraqi refugees through Macedonia and Hungary up to Germany. But you have all these other people from Pakistan, Iran. We're talking to some Iranian guys on the border. Mm-hmm. When we were texting with you, and their family had been killed, because they're not Iraqi, they're not able to proceed through to Germany, and they've been told they're going to be deported back to Iran, but because they left Iran, then they've got some serious problems if they ever actually arrive back in Iran. So trying to deal with the complexity of all of those issues. And the changing nature of where Greece are putting people, and some people are going through, and some people are being diverted back to camps, and that whole thing. So,
well, let me ask our third question. And you're talking through some very complex things. You're talking about transitions, and so you may have already began to touch on this. And that's, what obstacles are you currently facing in leadership for the organization or personally as a leader?
I think that the personally is empowering other people at a greater level. We've always empowered people. Mm-hmm. I really believe that the guy who's on the coalface should be making 90% of the decisions, but maintaining culture of the organization as you open up new countries all the time, and you're always adding in new people, that can be a challenge. And getting the right people in place to deal with those situations. 6 months ago, we didn't have a refugee assistance program. Now we're in the middle of the refugee program because they're the most vulnerable people on earth to being trafficked. And I think Chris was mentioning the fact that there's been multiple cases of people literally being found where they'd had all their organs taken. And so there's now organ trafficking in that area.
They have no advocates. I mean, there's an unattended minor or a person that just, they're defenseless.
No, there's, you've got lots of unattended minors. You've got lots of people who, they're out of money and they're trying to get a better life. So they're incredibly vulnerable to, offers of people, hey, come with me and I'll help you get to Greece, or I'll get you to Germany, and once you're in that person's custody, you've lost all control of your life, and you never quite know where you'll turn up. So, for us, the biggest focuses are maintaining culture as we grow, and empowering people, and finding the right people to fulfill and outwork everything that we're doing.
And before we move any further, I just want to ask, how, if somebody wants to know more about A21. Or the work that you do, what is the best place for them to find out?
The best place is the website, which is just a21.org. Nice and simple. So good, a21.org.
Now, is this, how does the organization, does the organization mostly work with churches or individuals or both?
A21 is strictly speaking a secular organization. Mm-hmm. And we work with everybody who we can find to work with.
Gotcha.
We work a lot with government. We're working with the UNHCR. We work with the UN. Work with the U.S. State Department on a lot of cases, but we work with police and all sorts of law enforcement because of the fact that they are the people who are ultimately have to do the rescues. We work to support them through prosecution, evidence collection, intelligence gathering. So we work across the board. Work with hospitals to provide medical care to victims. So we'll work with anybody who's in the fight.
I was what I'm curious about, where I didn't ask the question well, but I'm glad that you answered it the way you did, is where does your support come from? Does it mainly come from churches or individuals?
Our support comes from churches and individuals, probably about 40% from churches and about 60% from individuals.
And again, that website is a21.org. That'll be in the show notes. So lifeway.com/churchleaders, you can find it there. We'll link to it, but you can go to a21.org directly to support, to learn more, to see how to be involved in any number of ways.
Well, I know that, you know, from doing a podcast before with Christine, and how she answered this question, that a lot of your, you know, ministry and life, it just really bleeds together with you guys, which is beautiful. It's the way I think it should be for all of us, is that overlap of ministry and life or just kind of coalesce into one thing. But you have to be careful because it hasn't been too long ago that we had her on and we asked her the same question. But that is, what does leadership look like in your home?
Well, we have always been a team. I picked my wife carefully on the basis that I wanted somebody who was going in the same direction. So Christine and I spend about 80% of our time as close to each other as you and I are right now. So we live together, travel together, work together. And she's probably the smartest person I've met. So we work together, we partner together on pretty much everything. We talk through everything. At home, I feel like it's my job to set the atmosphere and set the direction for our family. I try to make sure that home is positive, home is fun.
The occasional unhealthy meal to keep things mixed up.
I am the donut. I am the donut man. As far as my kids' Amen. School friends are concerned, is when's the donut man coming? Because I will regularly take.
Wasn't there a cheesy Christian kids video series from like the 80s, early 90s called The Donut Man?
I think there might be.
Okay. I grew up in Australia, so I unfortunately missed that.
Maybe fortunately.
Unfortunately.
But you're the second coming of the donut. This is fantastic.
Yeah. I'm going to leave that one entirely alone on the basis that nothing I say is
broken. I don't know how you can come out of that.
Yeah. I try to make sure that we have fun with the kids. I make sure I talk to our kids no matter where I am in the world. I would talk to them probably twice a day. The moment they get out of bed and depending where we are, either before they go to bed or the moment they get in the car from school, my youngest daughter will not go to sleep until I've prayed for her. She's not really fussed where I am, who I'm with.
What the time zone difference is.
No. So if she feels like I haven't prayed or I haven't prayed adequately for her, then my phone will ring. And they know that if they call, then I'm gonna answer it. So Chris and I work. The short answer is Chris and I work as a team. Ultimately, it's my job to set the atmosphere and the direction and to keep things going positive. And she's about the easiest person to get along with. A lot of people see the passion and the presence of Christine on stage and associate her as being forceful and bossy. She's about the easiest person on earth to work with most of the time, as long as you've got a reasoned case of, no, I know you want to do that, but I think we actually need to do this for this reason. So yeah, we partner, but it's my job to set the atmosphere and set the spirit and keep us all moving happily in the same direction.
I would venture to say that most people who have a public, like a speaking presence that's exceptionally fiery, have a distinctly different side at home. And it's not two-faced, it's just
Why would you say that, Barnabas?
Because I know a guy who shares a last name with me who is rather fiery on stage and is really easygoing and quiet at home. But it's just two different expressions of their personality, or yeah, two different sides. And so it's dangerous for people to look at somebody and assume that, like, that is the ideal personality, or that that's the whole of a person. Yeah.
I remember, again, because I knew Christine. I had seen Christine at church before I ever knew her. And I knew that she was Christine Kariopoulos, and she was the firebrand, and she was this, and she was that. And in fact, I was at Bible College, and she was going to come in and do a couple of lectures, or had come in and done a couple of lectures. And one of our pastors said to me, said, "Hey Nick, I'm going to try and set you up with this girl." And I said, "No, I'm not interested in her. I'm going to chase Christine." And and he looked at me and said, "Oh, you're braver than I am. She scares me." So she was always fiery. And then I got to know her a bit, and I remember sitting in a car. It was after church on a Sunday night. We were driving into the city for ice cream, and she's telling me about this case that she had been working with through the youth center, and I looked at her and I says, "You're just a really big softie." And it was a bit of a shock to me, because I was expecting her to be fiery all the time, but she is actually a softie, and it is the easiest person to get along with most of the time.
Well, most of the time is better than most of us, so good for her and good for you. Let's hit our fifth question. And so you have a couple young daughters. Your ministries work with a lot of younger people. So think back to when you were 20. So I don't know if that was Bible college or pre-Bible college or what, but what advice would you give your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
My 20-year-old self was in university or college doing a finance degree. So some of the advice I would give would be chill out and understand that you probably don't know anything. The best piece of advice I got as a 21-year-old on the day before I started my first job in the finance industry was from a friend who had been working in the industry for years, and she looked at me and said, "Nick, you need to know you don't know anything. So when you go to work tomorrow, remember you don't know anything. So become a learner and don't think you know everything." And that was great advice. So my advice would be a learner. Don't be in a hurry. Be excellent at everything that you do. Be excellent at what your hand finds to do. And don't stress, because they say that the average person changes careers something like 4 to 6 times.
And I think that number's going up.
Yep. Yeah. And for sure. So don't feel like you've got to have your God destiny nailed at 20, because I went from being a merchant banker to running a advertising sales business to a mortgage broking business to working with church leaders. So life will evolve. Love Jesus and love what you're doing. Always contribute more than you're paid to do, and you'll always get paid more. So if you're always, I would say always just go over and above, but don't stress. And God has a way of working the path out, mm-hmm. and generally it's a path that you would never work out. So don't try and sort of figure your God path out, but do what God puts in front of you today and do it as well as you possibly could do it.
That's really good advice. I think, you know, the couple of takeaways for me, first of all, is remember you don't know anything is probably great advice, no matter whether you're 20, 40, 60.
Well, especially what followed that, which is don't walk in assuming you know things, be a learner. That sticks with you.
Absolutely. Be a learner. And then, you know, make sure that you're making more deposits than you are withdrawals in any organization, I think is also brilliant. And just finding what God has put in your hands to do today, and what he's given you passion for today. And that's going to lead to your next step.
I think what you said about doing whatever you're doing with excellence and for the Lord is something that at 20, I didn't have the mindset of that. I think I had sort of I want to do that other thing for the Lord. The thing I'm doing right now is a crappy job that I'm dissatisfied with, or I'm just not there yet, wherever there is. And so that idea of
stewardship, really.
Well, yeah. And of the fact that God is guiding your steps. Yeah. And if you think you're making a plan, even if you're doing a good job, it's not your plan.
Yeah.
You work and God guides.
And God's got to teach you a whole lot of stuff to get you to where you actually have something to contribute.
Usually some humiliation along the way or humbling.
Yeah. There may have been a few incidences of that along the way. But yeah.
Yeah, those are the times you learn the most and you hate the most. Well, Nick, we really appreciated having you on. And like we told the listeners at the beginning, we have an important hot chicken date.
Yes,
so we are going to wrap this thing up. But before I do, I want to remind listeners, A21.org is the website to go to. So learn about how you can support their ministry or their efforts with refugees, with sex trafficking, with basically people facing injustice in various parts of the world, support them financially and in any other capacity they list there. So A21.org, go check that out. Nick, thanks so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure. Fun.
Absolutely. Thank you. And listeners, thanks so much for joining us again, and tune in next time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. As you go, don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our upcoming Pipeline Conference. It will be on October 13th in Nashville, Tennessee, and early bird pricing runs through July, so move quickly to register. Again, that website is myleadershippipeline.com. We look forward to seeing you there.